We're live.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call the study session of the University City City Council to order on October the 25th. Tonight, we are having a joint study session with the Storm Water Commission of the River DePere. Before we turn the program over to our panelists, are there any changes to the agenda for this evening at this time? Hearing none, Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor and Council Members, this item asks that you receive an update from representatives from the Army Corps of Engineers on the River DePere project and provide any direction that you believe is appropriate. Mr. Appleson, I would ask that you introduce our guest.
Thank you, Mr. Rose, Honorable Mayor Crow, Council Members and Commissioners. Today, we have the update to University City Council and Commission on Stormwater Issues joint session on the general reevaluation report that the Army Corps study team has been working on. They will share with you their updated, tentatively selected plan proposal for our community, as well as a timeline of events that brings them to agency decision milestone by the end of the November 30th. Please keep in mind, until that time, we have a November 2nd commission meeting, as well as November 8th and November 22nd council meetings after today's meeting to provide the necessary feedback, even after today's session, to the study team. With this, I'd like to turn it over to the Army Corps study team for their presentation, led by Mr. Matt Jones and Ms. Janet Buchanan.
Yeah, hi. Thank you very much, Sinan. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Honorable Council Members and Commission Members. We really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you guys on such short notice. We have a lot to share with you, so I won't belabor it. Janet, I believe you're going to pull up the presentation.
Yes, I am. I'm just going to pull that up just a moment.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for your patience. Again, this is just our update that we promised. You know, after the last couple of meetings, we knew we were going to have some updated numbers. So this is the time to talk about that. If we can go ahead and go to slide number. So we do have an overview of the project, just as a refresher. We have our original TSP as well as our new NED plan. We also have some information about what happens if the city would like to go with a locally preferred plan, also known as the LPP. And then we're going to dive into the PM side of things, the cost share, some of the funding options that Mr. Sean Sullivan provided to you all a few weeks ago. And he's also on the line for support. So thanks, Sean, for being here. Finally, we'll go over the schedule, and then we can have some Q&A session period of time and maybe some discussion. So we can go ahead and flip to the next slide, and then I'll turn it over to Janet Buchanan, who is our lead planner, to brief you all.
All right, thank you, Matt, and thank you, Mayor Crow, and everybody on the call. I appreciate you all being here in the same place, virtually at the same time. It's kind of coming at a good time, I think, that we can speak to you all today with a lot of this information. And give you, information to digest that I think has been a while coming. So, yes, there'll be a lot today, but there'll be some time, as Sinan said, to go through it. So I'm looking at the study schedule. Can you all hear me okay? I should probably check on my level here. Is that a decent volume?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you very much. Okay. All right, so we're looking at the schedule here. The green is dates that have already happened. The last time that you will have seen us was around the time of the public meeting. We had a meeting in July and one in August. And now we're looking ahead to the 30th of November agency decision milestone, which is one of the big sort of important milestones in the study, where we turn the tentatively selected plan into our, you know, more finalized recommended plan and build the report around that after the milestone. But I've got a note there on the side that if a locally preferred plan, an LPP, is requested, then that deadline can be pushed. And we thought that February might be around the latest that it could be pushed to, but just wanted to put that up front, that that could change. To revisit the draft report. So as I mentioned, the last time you've seen us was during those two public meetings in July and August. The draft report went out at the same time, and no public comments were received via email. We did have a couple of questions that were not directly related to the report, which we've gone ahead and answered or directed those citizens to the city. But comments and questions received in the public meetings themselves were considered, and those will be included in our final report appendix. So to recap the tentatively selected plan as it was in May 2021 at the TSP milestone. So what it used to be was about 500 residential structures in the 25-year floodplain, most of those receiving floodproofing, and about 7 of them receiving elevation treatment. So that had the highest net annual benefits at the time. And we identified some next steps to help refine that plan and see, you know, in more detail with better knowledge, what would change. But at the time, we also saw that Detention Basin 4 in particular had very high annual net benefits as well. And so we thought that it might be good to continue analyzing that as well and bring that forward into our newer part of the study. So that's what we've done, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. So for our refinement of the TSP, we had to update our costs following 2 internal review processes. And then we also had refinement based on changes to the treatments that were applied to the eligible structures with certain depths of flooding. We looked at the 10-year flood event, structure damages and benefits for that, as well as the 25-year and the 50-year. We looked at changes to the way that structures were aggregated or grouped together based on input from our Corps of Engineers Flood Risk Management Planning Center of Expertise. And we also reviewed the land agreement for the DB4 site and had some engagement with the City of Overland. So I'll talk about all of those things in the next slides. All right, I've got a few tables, so I apologize, but this is the nuts and bolts. So having updated the costs, this is what our final array of alternatives looked like. In terms of net annual benefits, which is what we use to identify the NED plan or the National Economic Development Plan, what came out on top was non-structural and Detention Basin 4 together. So that had net annual benefits of $1.168 million. In number 2, with the next highest net annual benefits, was Detention Basin 4 alone. Number 3 was non-structural only. Number 4 was Detention Basins 3 and 4 together. And number 5 was U12, which is channel and bridge modification. The U12 is the code that was applied to that in the original feasibility study from 1988. So those changes plus Detention Basins 3 and 4. I will note that these numbers are not final. There is one additional cost update needed. That's a revised non-residential floodproofing cost, but I've been advised that that should not change the totals much. It shouldn't change, you know, what comes out on top. So another element that went into the non-structural alternatives, those two that were on the right of the table, are the treatments that were applied to structures. So this is where the sort of many economics analysis rules of how we do planning came into play. So this is what we came out with. The first criteria was a residential structure with flooding more than 2 feet relative to the first floor would be applied, would have elevation applied. So the structure would be elevated up to the 100-year flood elevation. Number two is that residential structure with -1 to 0 feet flooding relative to the first floor. So that's basically flooding that's almost up to or right at the first floor would have the basement filled. Number three is for non-residential structures, if flooding was up to 3 feet above the first floor, I should say 0 to 3 feet, that would be recommended for dry flood proofing. And lastly, any structure for which the cost of the treatment would exceed the cost of actually buying out the structure, that would be recommended for a buyout or acquisition. So we've been meeting with members of the Commission on Stormwater Issues, usually about two members per meeting, and Sinan Alpaslan in addition from the city, and holding those sort of technical meetings about once every 2 weeks through the course of the study, at least this year. And so when we raised this with them at a technical meeting, the commission members had concerns about the residential structures with 0 to 2 feet flooding relative to the first floor, because as you may have noticed, between number one and number two, there's kind of a gap for structures that have 0 to 2 feet flooding. So we've had to sort of think about this and come up with, you know, a response that makes sense, and I hope that I'll do it justice here, but it really does come down to the numbers, unfortunately. We started by looking back at alternative 7 from the previous array, which was only elevation, and those numbers showed that elevating those structures, which were, you know, that little amount of flooding above the first floor, was too expensive relative to the benefit. And the 2 feet cutoff that was eventually applied here was geared towards inclusivity, so trying to include as many structures as possible and reduce risk, but also having to balance with cost efficiency to make sure that the overall project had a high amount of net annual benefit. So I believe we may have our economist on the line as well, and we can feel free to open it up for questions on this as well. I'll also have a prompt on this on our potential LPP slides, so we can talk about this more. Okay, we're getting into the weeds on the aggregation of structures. So this little graphic here shows that there are 20 reaches that were identified on either side of the river, you know, going upstream to downstream, based on criteria such as the city boundaries, left bank and right bank of the river, residential versus non-residential, historic districts. And so that was what was used to kind of break up the study area into manageable chunks. And then once it was broken into reaches, the 10, 25, and 50-year flood events were applied to each reach. So looking at what the different floods would do in each reach specifically. And then different events were found to maximize benefits in each reach. And to show this, I pasted in the table here. So showing the reaches on the side, on the left-hand column, followed by the aggregation that's the best fit for that reach or that maximizes benefits for that reach. So you'll see, you know, it says no action, 10-year, 50-year, 25-year. Yeah, so that's for the detention basin 4 plus non-structural alternative, the new NED plan. 10 of the reaches were optimized for no action. What that means is if we proceed with this plan, those reaches would not be included. Those structures would just not have enough net benefits to include in the NED plan. To break it down by structures, which I think is a little bit easier to digest, on the left-hand side, we've got the DB4 plus non-structural. So the number of structures in that, we looked at elevation would be 0. Dry flood proofing of non-residential structures would be 19 structures. Filling the basement would be 22 residential structures. And there would be 7 acquisitions for a total of 48 structures. And the reason there's a 0 by elevation was that with those cost adjustments, it was found that elevation was not cost effective for any of the structures. The cost went up too much so that those properties would actually be cheaper to acquire. And then I pasted on the right-hand side the comparison with the non-structural only alternative, just to show that there were a lot more structures included. And this shows the difference that DB4 makes. So Detention Basin 4 reduces the flood stages enough to, you know, remove a whole bunch of structures from receiving that flood damage. So it really is of great benefit to have DB4. So a summary of the new NED plan, which is that DB4 plus non-structural. So DB4 would be constructed in Woodson Road Park in Overland. There'd be 19 non-residential structures, dry flood proofed, 22 residential structures filling the basement, and 7 structures acquired. The total first project cost would be, oh, and I apologize, I don't think I updated these numbers. We had some new numbers today. So this should be a $22 million total. So it did increase based on our cost increases. So I will, Sina and I will send you updated slides to provide documentation with the correct numbers. Yep, so please ignore those. You can refer to the previous slide for the correct totals here. Also, we will be providing a map, and that will show the detention basin and the structures, and that should be coming in the next few weeks. I know that DB4 being such an important part of the NED plan, we've had a lot of questions and concern about whether the city of Overland would be amenable to this. And I have generally good news on that front. So since the previous time that we've spoken, we've had a site visit to the Woodson Road Park site and met with City of Overland staff on July 8th. We had several follow-up emails with them. We reviewed the agreement with the Department of the Interior and determined a path forward of repurposing the site. And so because the park was created through an agreement with Department of the Interior for the purpose of recreation, it would involve City of Overland applying to the Department of the Interior to repurpose it for flood management, which would be like a higher purpose. Okay, and then we developed a packet of information to share with the Overland City Council, and that should be being sent first to UCity this week before sending to them. We are going to be requesting a verbal confirmation or letter of support or a motion passed saying that they are amenable to continuing to explore DB4 being repurposed for this purpose by November 15th. And our study team members are planning to attend the November 8th Overland City Council meeting. And I'll add one more thing from what's on the slide. I became aware recently that the City Council had met and discussed this site, and that they would have had to pay additional funding to maintain the site from its current drainage issues, and also to replace some lighting that's at the site that does not function. And so one advantage to DB4 is that they would have essentially a relocated park site and not have to pay for those maintenance and upgrade costs. So they were amenable to that, definitely. I wanted to touch on the survey, since I think we've had a bit of a journey with the survey. Finding out what exactly is allowed by the core and not allowed. So how we got here on the question of surveying the public about the study. The commission and the city were first interested in gauging citizen interest in floodproofing and elevation, which was our TSP, to estimate participation. So how many people would want to participate in this? The commission then developed a 4-question survey. They were at that time hoping for responses by mid-October, and our initial understanding that this would be fine. But unfortunately, we had clarification on policy that restricts our involvement in surveys and even restricts the city's involvement in surveys. So we tried to find a workaround, suggesting support from the State Emergency Management Agency. But I've been advised that the current status, as we found a solution, the survey will actually be conducted as part of the stormwater plan process. It won't be, you know, in support of this study. It'll be a separate entity, and we as the Corps would not be involved. So that will help us meet our policy. It does not help so much directly with providing input to this study. But on the other hand, we were running low on time to be able to incorporate the results in any case. So that's an unfortunate thing that our policy got in the way, but we will continue to touch base on it, but not be involved with it. Okay, so for today, I'm going to lay out some information about the locally preferred plan. And on my next slide, I've got some sort of ideas, some prompts about what direction you all as the city might want to go. But I want to say, you know, today we're not expecting any decision, any final answers on this. This is just information to digest. And we know that the November 2nd commission meeting will be able to look at this information and help to advise as well. But so here's the information on the locally preferred plan. So University City, as the non-federal sponsor, may select an LPP that's different from the NED plan. The LPP must meet several criteria in order to be approved. If the LPP is smaller than the NED plan, so it's less scope and it's lower in cost, then it must have greater net benefits than a smaller scale plan. So there must be a smaller one that's kind of worse in terms of benefits. It must still provide high priority outputs. We must be able to show that alternative non-federal funding sources are not available. So for example, you know, if there was more money available, you would be able to do a bigger plan, that kind of thing. It must meet the requirements of the National Environmental Protection Act. And we also have to document the residual risk. So that's the amount of remaining flood risk, and show that that's reasonable. Then looking at the LPP, if it's larger than the NED plan, there are several other criteria that apply. And the sponsor must pay the difference between the cost of the LPP and the NED plan. On this last bullet here, the more different the LPP is from the NED plan, the more time and effort would be required to get it approved, and the higher the potential that the study might run out of funding. So I know we've mentioned this before. We are doing this study on a much lower budget than we normally do for this type of study. So it has been a struggle already to, you know, get these high quality outputs with the budget that we do have. And there is concern on our team and our higher ups about, you know, being able to put a lot more effort into a very different LPP. Okay. So I went back in all of our meeting notes and tried to think about what might the city want in a locally preferred plan. So these are the ideas that were already generated by the study team and the commission. A scaled down version of the non-structural mixed plan with fewer structures. So maybe fewer or zero acquisitions, or only structures that were impacted at a lower flood event. Potentially adding residential structures with that 0 to 2 feet flooding relative to the first floor. Although, as I mentioned, that does tend to bring the benefits down, and that you do need to still document that there's enough benefit for the project to be approved. Number three is eliminate structures in reaches outside of UCity. And I put an asterisk here. Some of these changes can actually be supported within the NED plan. So a little bit more back and forth can actually incorporate those, and it wouldn't need to be an LPP. Number four is a different alternative entirely. So for example, if there was interest in the U12 channel and bridge modifications with detention basin 3 and 4, you know, that's an option. It did have positive net annual benefits. Moving Detention Basin 3 to another location in U City had been floated, and other ideas. So those were the ones that I captured. I'm not going to turn this into an open forum on this slide, although you're very welcome to suggest ideas at the end, but I more wanted to provide some prompts and some a place to start of what we'd already discussed at some level. Okay, and with that, I'm going to turn back to Matt Jones to discuss some of the cost sharing and funding sources information.
Yeah, thank you, Janet. I just wanted to share the project delivery business process with you guys, just to kind of show you in the grand scheme of things where we are. So right now we are in that center blue arrow at the top. So we're in the study phase. Normally we conduct these studies in 3 years. I think we're pretty close to that. We might be just a hair over that, but there's been a lot of engagement and a lot of positive feedback that we've received, from the commission as well as from the city. So the idea is that once we get through the study, that product, which is that final feasibility study report, it ends in a chief's report approval. That's kind of like that last milestone for our feasibility study. Then what happens are a couple of the next steps. So we would move on, assuming we had a positive chief's report approval, we would move on to what we call PED, which is pre-construction engineering and design. That's where we dive into the design a little bit more than what we will have at the end of feasibility, which is typically around 30 to 35% level of design. We would take that even further. We would execute a new design agreement, do the necessary environmental work and all of that stuff. And then it's really a matter of us getting construction funds from Congress. So we would need not only authorization from Congress, but as well as an appropriation of construction funds. And I did want to point out on that next arrow, so it's the bottom left blue arrow, that it would be at that point when we would expect the non-federal sponsors, so the city, to acquire the LERDs, which are the easements, rights of way, relocation, disposal areas. And that all goes towards the sponsors' end of the cost share, the sponsors' portion of the cost share. Unless you guys have any specific questions on this slide, it just kind of shows you where we go from here and where we are currently in the process. Next slide, please. I do know that we had Mr. Sean Sullivan, who is our district's strategic planning coordinator. He did present at one of our technical meetings back in August. And then he followed up with presenting those slides to the city and the commission the same day. It was basically trying to outline some of the different funding sources that the city could potentially, explore and maybe get into a little bit deeper to see what kind of funding or what kind of project the city was able to really sustain in terms of funding. So on the slide right now are a list of those funding sources that he presented. So the Brentwood Bound, the Metro East levies, they introduced a quarter cent sales tax. Eureka, Missouri, for example, had Prop E, which was a half cent sales tax over a certain amount of time. There's other varieties of that you see on the list in front of you. There's also some larger scale funding opportunities like the BRIC grants, that are coming from FEMA. So this is just not an exhaustive list, but just an area that the city could start exploring what potential funding opportunities there were moving forward. Next slide, please. And this is just to kind of share with the city, just maybe a different perspective. So, we have on this federal project, our federal projects are cost shared 65%, 35%. So the federal cost is 65% of that total first project cost. And then the non-federal sponsor, which would be the city in this case, would be 35% of the total first project cost. So while the new NED plan does, that's no joke of an amount, $22 million, but just showing you how that would break down would be 14.3 million in that case, and would be the federal share, and then 7.7 million would be the non-federal share. It's also worth noting that, as I was talking about in a couple of slides back, the LERDs, the lands and easements and the real estate. So the non-federal sponsor does acquire that, but then they get LERDs crediting, which is meaning that you don't have to come up with 35% of the project in all cash, right? So you only have to come up with, say, 5% in cash, and the other 30% could be in those real estate acquisitions or the costs associated with relocations and that kind of thing. That bottom section is just a couple of notes that we wanted to share with you all. So while we don't believe that there would be a cost to the homeowner or the renters in the case of relocations or buyouts or floodproofing, there is an opportunity that the sponsor that you could pass some of those costs on to the owners. There are mechanisms where you can do such if you were trying to lower the cost that the city had to actually pay. And then there are certain relocation costs for renters that are included in the cost that we have shared with you today. Renters do get a relocation expense according to federal law, the Uniform Relocation Act. As well as there's relocation costs for owners who actually own the structures that will be acquired. So those costs would also be covered. And then finally, I know that we've talked about this in the past, and this question was brought up, and as we've done a little bit more research on our side of things, the way that we understand it now is that compensation will be provided for the loss of a basement or a living space in the case of some of those non-structural remedies that we've talked about. Next slide, please. And this kind of gets us to our next steps. I know this slide is a little bit busy, so I apologize, but we want to make sure that we list everything out and kind of go step by step. So on that first number, that's kind of what we've done in the last week or two, getting the real estate cost on our side and the flood proofing cost to Jordan, who's our economist, and he's also on the line as well. And then getting the final, in quotes, non-structural and DB4 plus non-structural alternatives. We had those by the 19th. So that we were trying to get that to you all so that you could get that as part of your agenda packet. We've also, we're working on the historic structures and the list of that and getting that letter from our folks to the SHPO. And then, we understand that there's commission meetings that are both regularly scheduled and then some that, can be called depending on member availability. So I just kind of wanted to share, the major points of this schedule. So on number 8, for example, we understand that, you won't be making any decisions tonight. But what we are hoping is that between the commission meeting being on the 2nd, and then, some back and forth, that we're really hoping, and it would be preferred on our side of things, if we could have a decision from the council on that November 8th meeting on whether or not the city would like to go with the TSP, the NED plan, or the locally preferred plan. I guess it's not the absolute, drop dead date that we would need to know. That's that second highlighted number 12. So obviously we have our ADM, which is our milestone on the 30th of November. So we're trying to save us a little bit of time in there to be able to make revisions to the slides that we have to give to our vertical team and really just to be prepared for that milestone. So it's not out of question that we could have a decision by the city on that November 22nd date, but it would be better if we could have it on the 8th. But we understand that there's a lot going into this decision, and we don't want to rush it. And so as you can see, that number 11, we have to get our read aheads, kind of like you all do for your agenda packets, and that we have to actually get our slides to our division. And we also want to get working on the LPP waiver if that's something that we're going to have to do, because that takes a lot of time for our vertical team. It has to go up to our ASA our Assistant Secretary of the Army for Civil Works. So just, it's a really arduous process. Just wanted to, share that with you all. We do have that ADM on November 30th on the books. And we would ask, regardless of whether the decision is made on the 8th or the 16th or the 22nd, that we have a representative from the city who can attend. And, our vertical team is always very good about asking for sponsor viewpoint. So, they'll come right out and ask, what does the city feel about this? Or how did they feel about this? And it'll be at that point that someone from the city will be able to speak to which way the city is leaning. Next slide, please. And then as Janet shared with you guys, if you do choose to go the LPP route, instead of that ADM meeting being on the 30th as an actual milestone meeting, what we would do is convert that into an IPR, an in-progress review, basically just a check-in with our vertical team and just explain to them what's going on, where we are, what the next steps are. As I described, we will have to submit an LPP waiver if that's the route that the city chooses to go. The ADM would then be moved to February to allow time for all of those different levels of review. It just has to go up through the chain. And then we expect that decision to be roughly 6 months. Sometimes it's longer or shorter. It really just depends on how things are going. But that's why we would push that ADM date out a little ways into February. Next slide. So that kind of takes us to this discussion and questions. It looks like we have, about 20, 25 minutes, for questions or comments or thoughts. Janet and myself are on. Sean Sullivan is also on. And I believe Jordan Lucas, our economist, is on as well. So we should have somebody on board who can help answer your questions if you have any. I'll turn it back over to the city. Thank you all very much.
Matt, Janet, thank you very much for your presentation. If we could go back to showing the participants, that would be helpful to me. Mr. Rose or Mr. Alpazlan, do you guys want to start with comments?
I would just start out by saying I think that a lot of progress has been made. Especially towards getting an alignment between what the city believed was a reasonable plan and what is acceptable to the Army Corps of Engineers. I did have a couple of questions, Mayor, if I might.
Sure.
The first question, I want to make sure that I understand the locally preferred plan as it relates to the financial impacts potentially on the city. As I understand it, basically the federal government costs would be capped at around $11 million, so they would not go higher in supporting a locally preferred plan. So as I understand it, the city, if the cost was in addition to the $22 million, the city would be expected to incur those costs. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that is correct, Mr. Rose. So like you said, if the plan was the LPP that the city wanted to go with was, say, $25 million, then the first portion, the NED plan portion would be cost shared, but then the additional $3 million would be 100% non-federal sponsor.
Second question I had is typically what is the time frame, especially in getting, assuming that we advance at a reasonable pace and we head towards trying to get design and construction dollars. What's the time in getting approval through the city, through the Congress?
Yeah, so that's a great question and one that Sean Sullivan, I think, answers better than I do. So Sean, if you wouldn't mind jumping in, I know you've been around a lot longer and you've had a few more experiences than I've had with this.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. And so Ms. Morose, that's always the question that always looms and on the horizon is that target that we're trying to hit. What I would tell you is that it's contingent upon opportunity. And through that opportunity, I'll give you an example. You know, we all hear about an infrastructure bill with the among the administration. With that infrastructure bill, I can tell you that we've already generally started thinking ahead that, you know, if there was opportunity that it presented itself to put forward financial requests, that we would do so. And so that helps to big infrastructure bills and appropriations like that help to accelerate. Now, to be more specific, though, if we were to go through our conventional process, that conventional process of complete the study, move into design, and seek construction dollars, you're probably looking at 3 years out from the time that the study is complete to the time that we're moving toward, we've got the authorization in place and we're seeking that appropriation. So, you know, that just puts it into context. I think, Matt, just for reference purposes, we're probably about, what, a year out on study completion?
Yeah, that sounds about right, Sean.
So that would, in total, about 4 years out.
Yeah, thank you.
Members of council, anyone else, you have to give me a signal if you have questions, or members of the task force as well. I see Mr. Cusick has his hand. Mr. Cusick.
Mayor Crow. Janet, Matt, I have a couple of quick questions. In your plan, you're now including the detention basins. It was my understanding that when we met last that you weren't sure what size the detention basins would have to be to have an impact on any potential flooding. So do you have more information on the actual size of the detention basins and the depth of the detention basins on how effective they would be?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Cusick. Yes, since that time, I guess that information has been developed. I am afraid I don't know it off the top of my head or could refer to it at this moment, but the detention basin size that was developed as the preliminary design, so less than a 35% level of detail design, was then applied in the model, the hydraulic modeling, and then the resulting reduction in flood stages were shown throughout the watershed. So I do know that that happened, but I'm afraid I don't have those sizes to hand, but we can follow up on that, definitely.
Yes, that'd be fine if we could have a follow up on that. And then another quick question, because I don't want to take up all the little bit of time we have. Will you be sharing the addresses with us on the households that you had identified as being eligible for flood proofing? Will we have an idea of where those are exactly?
Yeah, so that's a tricky question. I'm going to pass the ball to Jordan, our economist, to speak to that, because we do have internal sort of criteria about how we share that type of information. But I will say that on the planning side, it can be very beneficial not to get to that level of detail at this point in the study. And I was just talking with a person at the Flood Risk Management Center of Expertise earlier today who was telling me that in some ways, leaving it more open instead of defining structure by structure at this point can help us when we get further down the line into that next phase. So if someone voluntarily decides not to participate, that there might be more room for other structures to be included. So that's what I would say on the front end to that. But I'll let Jordan speak to your specific question. Jordan, are you on?
You know, I don't see Jordan on. I know that he had planned to get on, so maybe he had some difficulties or something, Janet, but Councilman Cusick, we can reach back out to Jordan and on this question, and then to Joel on your other question, and get back with you.
Okay, thank you. And my last question is for Mr. Rose and it, or for Janet or Matt. Will you be at the next Stormwater Commission meeting?
I'm happy to attend any meeting that you think that it would be beneficial for me to be at. So yeah, if you want me there, I'm happy to come.
November 2nd meeting, will the Stormwater Commission have a chance to speak with the members of the Army Corps more in depth about the LPP versus the TSP?
Yeah, so Councilman Cusick, I believe we will be able to attend that. Janet, are you tracking that as well?
No.
Yes, I confirmed I will be able to attend that day as well. So yes, at least one of us.
Well, I don't want to step on anyone's toes on this, but I didn't know if this was going to be part of the process or not.
Yeah, sure. So I know that there have been times in the past where the commission kind of wanted to talk amongst themselves and not necessarily have us present. So we can do it that way, but we're more than willing to come and speak with you all. And, you know, we don't have to provide the same presentation per se, but if you'd like us to, we can do that. Whatever kind of helps aid in the process, we're definitely open to.
Then I would defer to Mr. Rose to just maybe discuss that with the chair of the commission and the commissioners. Thank you. That's all I have.
Other questions from members of council? I don't see anyone right now. Mr. Clay.
Yes, thank you, Mayor Crow, and thank you to the Army Corps for their presentation. A couple of questions for you. So, as I understand it, all the homeowners that could potentially be impacted, particularly as it relates to any sort of remediation, they have been contacted. What have been I'm just curious, the mechanisms of outreach to those folks?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been learning about this, and we'll definitely be developing documentation we can share with you to review. It's going to be called the Non-Structural Implementation Plan, which is a long-winded way of saying how we reach out to those folks and how they will engage with the program of doing those non-structural features. So what the rollout would look like, most likely, is that after the study is complete, we move into that pre-construction engineering and design phase, and we hold a sign-up period for homeowners and also non-residential structure owners. And they would be able to come to probably a physical location, central location, or apply remotely. And at that point, then sort of a structure survey would happen. Eligibility of ownership would be verified, that they indeed had the deed to the property, things like that. It would be at that point that they would have a floodproofing agreement signed, which is the name of the agreement that is, you know, coordinated between the city and the Corps and the homeowner. And from there, then it would move to actual implementation, so elevating the structure or floodproofing, etc.
And so if people prior to that, where you're actually doing the mitigation, sorry if I cut out, prior to that, as you're doing, prior to doing the mitigation, have people at this point reached out to? I'm assuming they have.
No.
No, they have not. Nope.
So there may be people who may not know in that. Yeah, so they may not know they're even in the, they may even not know that any of this is germane to them right now.
That's correct. Yeah. So it's sort of a balancing act between, you know, we want to give people as much advance notice as possible, but also we don't have the recommended plan yet. So we don't want to, you know, provide incorrect information that might change is how we're looking at it. Yeah.
Okay. So let me ask this question. Folks who may be paying attention to this, and certainly once folks get notified, well, I guess I'm more concerned about people right now who may be paying attention. The material, as I've noted before, is very dense. This material is significant. And again, I've been waist deep in this, no pun intended, for about 4 years, and just now really understanding all the implications of it. If I'm a lay person, what resources are out there for me to help decipher this? I know that there have been meetings, but I would imagine if you're not really charged with studying this, it, even with the meetings, it's still probably hard to figure some of this out. What resources are available for folks?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'll start to answer it, but I'd love to hear from Matt and Sean as well. So when we get to that point where we're ready to reach out to the public, there will be definitely information, pamphlets, brochures, a website will be set up, lots of avenues to let people know in plain speak, you know, no technical jargon, as much as can be avoided, about how the program would work, what it means for their property, the relocation and what that would mean, you know, all of those different elements would be provided. We'd coordinate that through our public affairs folks as well as through the city. So we'd all get to agree on the language that goes out to the public. So hopefully it should be easier to understand. But I will agree with you that it's been very technically dense so far. And even for experts, it's been a tough thing to follow. But yes, Matt or Sean, I'd love to hear what you would say to that.
Yeah, Jane, thanks, yeah. Council McClay. I don't disagree. Oh, I'm sorry.
Keep going, Matt.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, we're very open to your thoughts and opinions. Obviously, you all as council members know your community, you know your citizens, and so, you know, if you feel that there is a more productive way to get information out other than a public meeting, albeit we did the best we could with, you know, being virtual, we're open to that. You know, if you think another public meeting and we can have it in person, I can say that Janet and I will be there, you know, to share things with the public as well, you know, with our other folks. Through our public affairs office, you know, we can make that work. So I don't want you to think that we're adverse to that. In fact, we're very, we're opposite. We're, you know, very interested in what you think and what you have to say and what recommendations you may have.
Okay. In the interest of time, did that question get answered? Cause we have other folks asking questions. If we need more information, we can. Let's move forward. I think Ms. Klein had a question as well.
I just want to clarify that participation in this program for the residents is voluntary. Is that correct? So if we made a decision to adopt a certain plan and then we went to the residents and the majority of them said, no, we don't want to participate, we'd have a big problem. So I'm just wondering, is it voluntary or do we make a decision and then they have to participate?
Yeah, that's a great question. Janet. And I probably could have made it clear in the slides, so I'll speak to that. So the non-structural, that is the floodproofing, the elevation, the acquisition, I'm so sorry. Let me rephrase. There's so many terms here. The floodproofing and the filling of basements, those are completely voluntary. It's only acquisition of structures. So in the NED plan, that's those 7 structures that would be mandatory. It's just a question of our policy, what we're required to do. And then if Detention Basin 4 is in the plan, then any structural feature like that, that would also be a mandatory thing. So in terms of going out to the public, yes, we've been, you know, thinking about this a lot. What would happen if nobody is interested in participating in the voluntary structures? What we do on our end is what we call a sensitivity analysis, looking at different levels of participation and how much that would affect the overall project. Mm-hmm. So that's actually going to be happening in the next week. So we'll have information by November 2nd, but also looking into the options for further down the line, where if we have a total amount of funding provided, then could that be provided to other types of measures? If people are saying no, you know, could other people then be brought into the program? So it's sort of an incomplete answer at the moment. But Matt, did you want to say something?
Yeah. I just wanted to add. So I know mandatory buyouts are not anything that are really ever very popular, especially with elected officials. So I wanted to touch on that. Basically, what that does is it says that the city is willing, has the capacity, the capability, and is willing to use eminent domain to acquire those, in this case, 7 properties. So there is longstanding core policy that states that, you know, when it comes to acquisitions, aka buyouts, they are mandatory, they're not voluntary. So I just wanted to clarify that just a little bit.
Yep. Just real quickly, as we're winding this down, are there any other hands that I've missed as far as people who, okay, Mr. McMahon?
Okay. Yeah, I'll try to be really quick. So there was a question about the homes that fit in the 0 to 2 feet, kind of the no man's land homes. And the implication on page 12, when you set up the number of structures between those two choices, DB4 plus non-structural and non-structural alone, it seems like those numbers of homes aren't identified. So we don't know if we're taking some of these numbers from acquisition, and it would seem like we're saving them, but do we have the number that go from needing elevation and then we've dropped them into no man's land, as opposed to a situation where they'd be filled in the basement? Because that without having that number, it's really an assumption of where those are going. Do you see what I mean? It's not a full formula to make the math make sense.
Yes, thank you. I think I understand the question, and I know we're getting towards the half hour. I can definitely speak to that. It's kind of a long answer, but the two tables that you saw, they are in fact comparable. They both have the same criteria applied from the previous slide, but those 0 to 2 feet homes were not included in either of those tables, so it's not the case that, you know, those were taken out of the table on the right to create the table on the left. It's a bit of a nuanced explanation. But I would say maybe as well, I would love to, you know, receive all of these questions and any additional questions that you don't have time for today. And we've been providing written responses as well, because we really do want to, you know, provide answers to all of these things. And some of these questions are hard to answer in a nutshell. So I would say that we could get back to you on that in a more concise and well-explained written format as well after this meeting, if that would work for you.
Okay. Eric.
Yes, thank you, Mayor Crow. I'll just briefly say, from Council Member Klein's, following on her train of thought, we have specifically asked the Corps, if we don't get full participation, how can we? And first of all, can we? And how can we spend the remaining budget? And so I think Ms. Buchanan has answered the sounds like we probably can spend that remaining budget. So what remains to be seen, I guess, is specifically how could we? And I know we're very interested in that, because there's a lot of other people who have flooding issues who we can go to. So we will be looking for that answer from the Corps.
Okay, I see. Mr. McMahon, you have another question, or your hands? Okay, anyone else, as we wind this down, I would like to hear a little bit more, and I can hear it offline. If someone can get to Gregory or me, the level of interest that Overland truly has in being of assistance to this. I think that there's always the opportunity to have a dialogue by The folks who made the presentation tonight are my staff members, but I think it's also important for us to show a level of respect to our neighbors when we are making these types of requests. So I'd kind of like to have a feel for that. And I also would say, I think I speak for an awful lot of our council members in that to the members of the task force, you guys have continued to just do phenomenal work for all of us. And I would have to say that all of us would love to have your input in every fashion possible before we take a vote. We have we are very, very fortunate to have all of you who have put in this much time and effort. And we recognize that we have a vote to take, and we would like to have your input. And we realize it may not be unanimous. We realize it may have some hiccups to it. But I would tell you that your opinion will go a long way with all of us, because we are trying to do something that is going to have a lifelong impact on our community. And we appreciate what you are doing. So with that, if there's nothing else coming before this body, we are going to be a little bit late to start the regular session. If we can have maybe a 5-minute break real quick, then we will start the next session. This meeting is now adjourned. Thank you. Thank you to all for coming. By the way, thank you for your presentation. Thank you very much.